This morning I will be reading Hosea 3:5. Afterward shall the children of Israel return and seek the Lord their God and David their king, and shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the later days.
All right, well, good morning. Glad to be back with all of you. I want to make a quick correction to the bulletin I'm going to be preaching tonight too. Gary is, I'm so thankful to him for filling in for me while I was gone, but I'm glad to be back and excited to talk to you this morning. I got to say, though, while I was gone, I come back and I saw him leading singing this morning. Colin has gotten so tall. These kids are just going up right around us. I remember when he was much, much, much shorter. But glad to be back with all of you. Missed you. Had a good vacation. Good to be home. Now this morning, we're going to talk about some things. You know, when I was in school, I spent a great deal of time. One of the many things they tried to teach us was about what they called current religious teachings. I spent a lot of time studying different religious views, especially religious views in the United States. I've studied the history of a lot of religious movements. And it's always been really interesting to me. You may not know this, but America, starting in about the 1700s, was a place of crazy religious diversity. There was a lot of religious movements that were started in America in the last 300 or so years. Many of these happened in the 1800s, and you know, even our group got a lot more notoriety during that time with the Restoration Movement. It grew and really had a bit of a renaissance of its own, a good growth during that Restoration time. And track how a lot of our churches got started in this area. But during all those different groups, we've had some pretty unusual religious groups in American history. The Shakers are a really interesting one. If you look at them, they're groups that believe in handling snakes and all kinds of very odd beliefs that I'm just going to say they're a little unusual. And most people in most religious groups, I like to think that they are doing their best to serve God and have a heart that is sincere. But I want to talk for a moment about a small group of people that I honestly don't believe their heart is sincere. And I think they have created this problem that we deal with a lot as Christians in America. And I'm going to call this problem the prosperity gospel. There are a group of people, you may have seen them on a television set somewhere, preaching into a microphone, saying something, and I'm just going to make something up off the top of my head. I'm not quoting anybody in particular. But something like, look, do you want to be healthier, wealthier, wiser? You want to be doing well? Well, you need to have faith in the Lord. So you need to send us $1,000. And that's called seed money. You sow that seed of faith, the Lord will give you a harvest. You just keep sending. You know, you got to put more and more faith in, and you keep sending us money, God is going to bless you financially. You keep sending us money, that cancer you're dealing with, don't worry about paying to treat that. God's going to take care of it. You just keep sending us money. You're going to be healthy, wealthy, and wise. There are a group of people in this country that teach that regularly from the pulpit. And when I think about them, I think about what Jesus says in Luke about the scribes and how they devour widows' houses. But they've created this really dangerous, unhealthy thought that even if we don't watch or interact with them, has affected a lot of people in modern Christianity. And that thought is, if I serve God, if I do good, good things are going to happen to me. If I serve God financially, God's going to bless me. If I serve God, God's going to help me when I'm dealing with health issues. He's going to take care of it. Nothing bad's going to happen if I'm serving God. And brethren, this morning, we're going to John chapter 11. We're continuing our time in John. And I want to put to you that John chapter 11 completely disagrees with that idea. The Lord our God is not an ATM. He is not a Wendy's. You don't go in there, you put in your order, you pay your money, and then he gives you what you want. Because it's not about you, it's about God and his own glory. You know, we do not give money, and the times when we give money on Sunday, we don't do that so that God will give us something back. It is a free will offering. We do it to further the work of the church, and we do it to show our love for God. You know, it's like we talk about every Sunday, and I think Bobby did a great job of that today. This is why we get our kids to come forward and to give. We don't teach our kids that this is going to somehow financially bless them. We teach them this is a good and righteous thing to do, to give as we have been prospered, to thank God for all of his blessings, and hope that we can take some of God's blessings and use those to help others through the oversight of our eldership and the way they spend and use that money given for God. So I wanted you to keep in mind this idea of what does it mean to be a Christian? What are you going to receive as we go into John chapter 11? And we're going to read the first three verses and kind of talk about the context here. It says, "Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, in the village of Mary and her sister Martha. And it was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. And so the sisters sent to him, saying, 'Lord, he whom you love is ill.'" Now, John chapter 11 is a tough chapter because it makes us look at, once again, this has been a topic we've already seen in John, how to handle pain and suffering and difficulty. These are real problems. A man is ill. His name is Lazarus. He's the brother of Mary and Martha. And we know Mary and Martha fairly well from various accounts within the Gospels. They're mentioned other places. These three are close disciples of Jesus. Jesus knows them. He cares about them. He would stay with them when he was in Bethany because it was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem. So this was a family he visited at least three times, we know of, during the time that he was a minister or ministering. We know that they love Jesus. Verse 2 tells us that Mary was the one who anointed Jesus' feet with her hair. And we know that not only did these three love Jesus, but that Jesus loved them. That's what they put in verse 3. That's the message he sends. Jesus is the one you love is ill. Jesus loves Lazarus. He loves Mary. He loves Martha. He knows these people closely. One of his dear friends and disciples and is ill. And he's not just ill. He's not just sick, but he's dying. And so this is why the sisters call for Jesus. And we get this very interesting reaction from Jesus in verses 4 through 6. There we go. So in verses 4 through 6 of John chapter 11, it says this: "But when Jesus heard it, he said, 'This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of Man may be glorified through it.' Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. And so when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was." Verse 4 sets forward the message of this whole chapter. Jesus said this illness doesn't lead to death. It leads to the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. And this is a pretty amazing statement. First off, because Jesus says that this illness does not lead to death. And Jesus is not mistaken about what's going to happen to Lazarus. He's the one that knows, without a messenger coming, that Lazarus does, in fact, die from this illness. But Jesus knew the outcome of this illness and where it would lead. He says it does not lead to death because he knew the future and he knew what he was going to do. Now, John reminds us again of something very important. In verse 5, we're reminded Jesus does love these people. He loves Martha and Mary and Lazarus. He's not indifferent to them. He doesn't just know them. He loves them. Therefore, when he hears that Lazarus is sick, he stays 2 more days in the place where they are. And notice how John paints this scene. Jesus knew what was going to happen. He loved them, and therefore he stayed 2 days longer rather than going to Bethany and helping them immediately. Because he loved them, he delays. And this is hard, I think, for us to get our minds around. That's a really unusual choice. If he loved them, why didn't he just go and fix it? How can it be that Jesus loved these three and didn't come immediately and help them when they asked him to come? How can the Lord wait? Let's put this scene in stronger terms so we feel the weight of what is happening. Jesus lets Lazarus die. That is what Jesus does. Jesus hears that he is ill. Jesus knows what's going to happen. And Jesus says, I'm going to wait 2 more days. Jesus lets Lazarus die. And he doesn't let Lazarus die because he doesn't love Lazarus. He did love Lazarus. He doesn't let Lazarus die because he didn't love Martha and Mary. He did. He loved all three of them. But Jesus let Lazarus die. How is it love to let this happen? And the answer to this question is found in verse 4. It's for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Jesus knows that this whole event, this whole occasion, is a moment where people are going to see and better know God. It's going to be an occasion for the glory of God to be put on display. And somehow this delay is for the good of everyone concerned. It's good for Jesus' disciple, as Jesus' disciples, as he's going to say in verse 15. It's good for Lazarus and Mary and Martha, because the text tells us twice that Jesus does love them. He loves them. And I need you to hear the truth of this. He loves them, but he doesn't immediately act. And boy, if you hear nothing else from this sermon, maybe take away the fact that God loves you, even if he doesn't immediately act. Because that prosperity gospel is a lie. That's not how God works. This is a truth that's hard for us to deal with, this message. Jesus stays where he is for 2 more days, and it almost looks like Jesus, God, ignores their request. The explanation in verses 4 and 5 gives us the second critical truth we see in this passage. They were allowed to go through this. They were allowed to suffer even though they loved God and were loved by God, so that God's glory could be displayed. No one at this moment, no one when this happened, could see how God could possibly be glorified by the death of Lazarus. No one could comprehend how this would be the love of God. The family couldn't understand how this was for God's glory. The disciples couldn't comprehend how this was for God's glory. Think about Lazarus' point of view, how he feels in all this. How would it look to him? It would look like Jesus didn't care enough to come and to help him when he was in need. Who could understand this decision by Jesus? Where are you, Lord? Why don't you do something? I thought you loved us. Jesus loved them. And he let Lazarus die so the glory of God could be revealed. Because the reality is, life isn't about my life here on earth. Life isn't about every physical difficulty that comes our way. Life is about the glory of God. Let's read on a little bit further. Verses 7 through 16. See how this story continues. It says, starting in verse 7, "Then after this he said to the disciples, 'Let's go to Judea again.' And the disciples said to him, 'Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and you are going there again.'" And let's remember, the last time we looked at John was John chapter 10. The end of John chapter 10 is Jesus narrowly escapes being stoned by the Jews in Jerusalem, which is 2 miles from Bethany. And Jesus, this is the second time in the book of John that Jesus has escaped being stoned by the Jews in Jerusalem. So for a third time, Jesus is going back to Jerusalem, a place where he's been almost killed twice. Disciples are a little concerned. They say in verse 8, "The Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and you're going there again?" And Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble, because he sees the light of the world. If anyone walks in the night, he stumbles, because the light is not in him." And after saying these things, he said to them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awaken him." And the disciples said, "Lord, if he's fallen asleep, he'll recover." Now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought that he meant taking rest in sleep. And Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus has died. And for your sake, I'm glad that I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him. And so Thomas, called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us also go, that we may die with him. After 2 days have passed, Jesus tells the disciples, all right, now it is time. We must go to Lazarus and his family. We got to go back to Judea. And the disciples are understandably concerned about this. Like we said, this is the third time Jesus is putting his life in danger. Twice already, he's almost died there. They don't think he's going to survive this. He's got a price on his head. Those people in Jerusalem are looking for him. But Jesus' response in verse 9 is encouraging. Basically, he says, what are you worried about? What are they going to do, kill me? If I'm walking in the light, if I'm serving God, you don't stumble. Deal with your fear by relying on the presence of the light in this world being in your midst. Jesus basically said, look, if you're with me, what do you think they're going to do to you? Even if they kill you, how are they going to separate you from the love of God? What are you guys afraid of? I think of the most common command in the Bible, fear not. What are y'all so afraid of? As long as you're with Jesus, you're secure. You don't have a need to worry. And it's not that prosperity gospel idea. Nothing bad's going to happen. You're going to be healthy, wealthy, and wise. It's that no matter what happens, you'll still be with Jesus. Take comfort in that. But if they are away from Jesus, then there's a cause for stumbling and a cause for worry. This is the message that we see so many times in the scriptures. God always tells his people, look, if you're with me, you ain't got nothing to be afraid of. It's when you're away from me that there are problems. When the disciples are on the boat in the Sea of Galilee, and the boat is sinking, the disciples are panicking, and they believe they'll perish. And Jesus is asleep, and he says, there's no reason to be afraid like this if I'm with you. It's the glorious truth of Psalm 23 that says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, not saying you're never going to walk through the valley of shadow of death. It's even though I am walking through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. Why? Because God walks through it with me. Your rod and your staff, they are a comfort to me. When the Lord is your shepherd, then you've got the comfort of the Lord with you. Jesus says they need to go back to Judea. But if you're walking in the day because you see the light of the world, your soul's safe with the Lord. We don't have to be afraid of what's going to happen when we go and do this. Jesus explains why they've got to go. He says, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep. I go to awaken him. We're going to Judea to wake up Lazarus. And of course, the disciples, as usual, they misunderstand. They're very confused by this language. They're probably very confused because Jesus has not gotten like a messenger telling him what's going on with Lazarus. He just tells them the state of Lazarus. And they say, hey, if he's asleep, he'll be fine. And Jesus is blunt. You know, he says, Lazarus is dead. This is a common theme in the book of John. Jesus says things that he means spiritually. And people get confused. He says, you got to be born again. And Nicodemus says, that's impossible. He says, I've got water. And the lady says, what do you mean you got water? He says, Lazarus is asleep. And the disciples say, what do you mean he's sleeping? He's fine then. The disciples continually can't figure out what Jesus is concerned with. But notice that Jesus doesn't say he's going to raise him from the dead. He says he's going to go wake him up. He says he's glad that he was not there so that they may believe. And the point is here in this passage and what Jesus is saying to the disciples, that if you're afraid of death, then you don't know who Jesus is. Yes, not that death's not a difficult and scary concept, but one of the great gifts of Scripture, perhaps the greatest gift God offers us, is that they're walking with God. Death might kill you, but it can't touch you. You may not be on this world anymore, but you're never going to be away from God. Death has no sting, as Paul puts it. It's powerless against God. There's nothing to be afraid of because no matter what happens, he will be with you. Jesus says, I want you guys to learn this lesson. I want you to learn that death is not the real problem in this world. And so we're going to go back. And I know y'all are afraid of dying, but we're going to go back. so that you can see the glory of God. And I love Thomas here. You know, Thomas gets a bad rap. We call him Doubting Thomas because he didn't believe that Jesus was resurrected. He had this problem with faith. But I think he makes a really powerful statement here. He has this courage. He says, all right, well, let us also go that we may die with him. The disciples don't understand Jesus. They don't understand God. They don't understand what's happening. And yet, they still have the courageous faith to go with Jesus to this dangerous situation. They think there's no way they're going to make it back from Judea. But if Jesus is going there, they're willing to go with him. And I think that is powerful, wonderful faith. You know, I look at this passage, this short passage in John 11, and there's three things I take away from it. The first is that what God does for his glory and for our good, we're not always going to understand. I don't think God hurts us. I don't think God creates bad situations in this world and creates all this suffering and pain, but the reality is God does allow these things to happen. God is not always going to do exactly what you want him to do, and we're not going to always understand. A series of massively difficult events in life, honestly, are what put me up here in the first place, preaching and teaching. It wasn't because things were easy that I wound up doing this job. It's because I had a lot of crazy, difficult things happen to me, and it made me value God, made me grow as a Christian, made me want to tell others about him. You know, if we're fortunate, maybe as we go through life, we look back and we see how God was with us in all our difficulties and all of our struggles. Maybe we'll never see exactly how God's glory was put on display through our difficulties. But when we're in the midst of suffering, it can be really easy to stop seeing God, to not understand where he is, to feel lost and away from him. And I think what we learn from this story is that God hasn't forgotten us. Jesus didn't forget Lazarus. He didn't forget Mary and Martha. They didn't see it. They didn't know it. But he was watching them the whole time. The disciples didn't see it, but Jesus knew. Just because something defies human reasoning doesn't mean that the glory of God is not active in it. God, second thing I think we can learn from this is that God always acts for his glory and purpose. You know, therefore, if my prayer isn't answered in the way that I desire, I can rest in the knowledge that God hasn't ignored it. That he still loves me. Sometimes the answer is no, but it is an answer. He still heard it. The Lord loved Lazarus, and he still died. The Lord loved the apostle James, and he still gets killed by Herod. The Lord loved his mother, and his mother still had to watch him die on the cross. The Lord loved Mary and Martha, and they still watched their brother die. This great lie we get sold sometimes is that if the Lord really loves you, you're never going to have difficulty. And that's not what the Bible teaches us. What the Bible teaches us is that if the Lord loves you, then in the midst of your difficulty, of your suffering, of your pain, he's gonna be with you. They don't call him the God of all protection. They call him the God of all comfort. Because that's who he is. The Lord's love means he will act for his glory, and I can put my faith in him and what he does. My life is supposed to be about him. My death is supposed to be about him. Everything that I do is supposed to be about the glory of God. The psalmist said the same in Psalm 63, verse 3, my lips will glorify you because your faithful love is better than life. And finally, I think the last thing we can learn from Lazarus this morning as we conclude is that if you are with Christ, then you have true life, and you're going to be okay. Man, that is that's the best promise to me. I remember when I came back to the church, I was an atheist for 5 years, from 14 to 19, and I came back at 19. I read through the whole Bible in about 6 or 8 months, and I'll never forget the passage that stuck with me the most, the one that just hit me right in the heart, and I think about it all the time. It's in Philippians chapter 4, verses 11 through 13, but Paul says this line. He says, I've learned to be content. And Paul describes how it doesn't matter what happens, doesn't matter what circumstance he goes through, whether it's good or bad, plenty and hunger, whatever. Because he is following Christ, he can be okay in any of those circumstances. He is content with anything that happens to him. And I thought, man, that's what I want more than anything in this world, is that promise of it don't matter what's on the news, it don't matter how bad coronavirus is running around, it don't matter what terrible thing is happening around me, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay because I'm not doing it alone. And God is with me. And that's about as much prosperity as I could hope for. It's this great blessing. We may walk through the valley of the shadow of death. We may face insurmountable obstacles and pain in our life. But if we're walking in the day and we see that light of the world, then we're secure that we're going to come through it one way or the other. It's not like we're walking at night and stumbling, as Jesus describes to the apostles. Ask yourself how what is happening today can be for the glory of God. Paul sat in a Roman prison and could speak about how it was for God's glory because he was getting a chance to teach the Praetorian Guards. Will God be glorified through our life and through our circumstances, or are we going to stumble away from God because we're focused on how difficult this circumstance is? I think the greatest struggle we have as a Christian is sometimes we go through difficulty and we get two options. We either cling harder to God in that difficulty, hold on to him like a rock in the storm, or we turn against him. We start wondering, where is he? Why didn't he come when Lazarus was sick? And we stumble away. And I think Jesus is trying to teach the disciples in this moment, trying to teach Martha and Mary, trying to teach us that, man, just because things don't look the way you would like them to look doesn't mean God's forgotten you. You're walking in the day. You won't stumble if you hold on to him, and he isn't letting go of you. This morning, I don't know what your struggle is, what your pain and your difficulty might be. Maybe you feel like you're stumbling pretty bad. Maybe you feel like you've had difficulty come and you've turned against God, given up on him. I hope if that's the case, you'll get the faith back today. Make a change. Put your faith in and know he hadn't abandoned you. Maybe you aren't a Christian and you don't know what it's like to walk in the day, to have this God that's with you every step of the way. Well, if that's the case, we want to help you to become one. I don't know what your need is this morning, but if you have one, please bring it as we stand and as we sing.
I wandered far away from God. Now I'm coming home. The path of sin too long I trod.